Guy Clark, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood.
Hi, gorgeous.
So I am lucky enough to be a very good friend of yours and you of me. But, you know, it came to my attention just recently of how good of friends you were with Carolyn Bessette Kennedy.
Yes.
And John F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah.
And everyone has been watching Love Story. It is such an incredible docuseries so far because we grew up in the 90s in New York watching this happen in, or I did, in the papers,
so
right?
So did I. I grew up watching it too.
Yeah. And it was to rewatch it through this docuseries is fascinating because you remember like the how minimalism, like the minimalisticness or whatever.
And
the word
you remember
is.
What you were wearing and how you wanted to be them.
Right.
Right.
And how Calvin Klein was all the rage and it was just so chic. And she was the it girl. She was the girl you wanted.
Simplicity was it. And she was simplicity.
Right.
Yeah.
So are you watching the show?
I'm watching it. Yeah.
And how do you feel about it?
To be honest with you, I was a little apprehensive at first because frankly, I was very close to her and I knew him pretty well. And I felt that I was going to hate it. And I've actually enjoyed watching it. I haven't cried through the whole thing, which I thought I would do. So
it's
pretty good.
All right, well, let's actually get right into that because you knew them very well. How did you know them? What were you doing in New York at the time?
Back in the 90s, I worked at Cartier in New York. I was in the high jewelry department, which meant basically that I was selling the big jewelry. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know Carolyn at all. She came into the store in her, you know, black and white Prada stuff, very simple. She walked in. I was kind of the head salesman, so I would watch over the boutique girls. And she walked into the main boutique, and I saw her, and I just stood there, you know, on the next level watching down. Mm-hmm. And she took out of her backpack this box with a watch in it that didn't exist.
Wow.
And I knew the watch because I'd been to Paris recently, talked to the executives, and I knew this watch was being launched, but I'd never seen it in person except for, you know, the prototype. Mm-hmm. And I swooped down and took it away from the sales girl because she was clueless. And I brought her into my little office off the main gallery. I had a little boiserie paneled French, you know, of course, little room, 8x10. Mm-hmm. And I sat her down and we instantly became friends. I loved her the moment I met her. I never heard of Carolyn Bessette. It wasn't my thing to follow that stuff mm-hmm. normally. I didn't know who she was.
So at the time, was she already in the papers?
Yeah, she was already in the papers, okay. But to be honest, it wasn't my thing to follow her. I was more interested in him personally.
Right.
Because he's so handsome, of course.
Right.
So, okay. And
but you had seen the papers about him dating Daryl Hannah.
Right.
And then maybe this new girl.
Right.
And it didn't really register. But
well, it registered, but it wasn't like I wasn't paying attention. It was like another girl for John. Who cares? You
right.
know, next, you know,
right.
that kind
and,
of thing.
And for people that are listening that don't remember, we were in the Post seeing every day how he didn't pass the bar.
Right.
Or I remember when his magazine, George, came to fruition
yep.
and like that whole thing. And I remember a lot about the bar. I remember a lot of photographs about
it was
him
embarrassing.
On his bike. Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was embarrassing.
And he was always running around town on his bike, mm-hmm. You know, with his suit pant rolled up and his hat on backwards, his cap.
Yeah.
And he was trying to be a normal guy.
Right.
And he tried really hard. And right. I always appreciated that he and I were in boarding school at the same time, competing schools, and you would hear stories about him and all this stuff. It didn't really interest me except for how he looked without his shirt on.
Right. Of course.
Terrible.
So you became instant friends with her.
Yes, we
and
became really
close. And how
did
she get this watch? What was this watch?
It's interesting. She and John went to a party in Geneva. They were invited to a dinner. Now, when you're invited to a dinner, you assume that it's a dinner, an intimate dinner. There was like 500 people there. They were mortified because they hadn't really been out and about that much at that point. This is early 1996, okay? I don't remember I know the exact day I met her was April 18th, 1996. And okay. I know that because I wrote in my diary, I met this beautiful human named Carolyn Bessette, and she's so ethereal. And I had all these notes about her. It was interesting.
So when you met her, what made her stand out?
Well, first of all, she had a watch that didn't exist.
Right.
And it was solid gold. And that was freaky because mm-hmm. I didn't even have stock numbers yet for her. So
right,
I took
so she must have been somebody that had
right,
access
right, right.
Which
to is
people.
Why yeah. I thought, oh, this is somebody, put her in the private room, shut the door and get mm-hmm. to know her because that's how I made my money back yeah. then, right? So I asked her, what do you want to do? She said, this is a solid gold watch. I'm never going to wear this. This is not my style. I need something really simple. So here's something that's really interesting. I've been quiet for 30 years, whatever it is now. Yeah, it's 30 years, isn't it? It's 30 years. 30. I've been quiet all this time, and I'm finally finding my voice to talk about her because I was keeping her close to me by keeping my mouth shut, and I was keeping our friendship quiet because I didn't think it was appropriate to come out. But anyway, so she brought in the watch. The watch was gold. It was a gold Tank Française, which is now still very popular all these years later. And she said she wanted something simple. Mm-hmm. So I got her a sterling silver Le Muster Cartier Tank watch on a black strap. And that's the watch she's seen wearing everywhere. It's not Jackie's watch. It's not Prince Radziwill's present to Jackie or any of those watches that were Tank watches. It wasn't even the Tank watch that JFK gave to Jackie when Patrick was born, who died a few days after birth. It was the watch I sold her that she's photographed in, and nobody knows that. Oh. And everybody's been writing on all these blogs about her watch. It's crazy. Like, there's one thing on, it's called the Two Misses on Instagram, and like 1,000 people have written to me about this watch. Because wow. I chimed in and said, hey, I sold her that watch. It was silver. It wasn't gold. It wasn't Jackie's. It was hers.
Wow. So what was she like, though? Because there's so much mystery around her, right? There's yes. the version that people know from working with her. And then the version that after she's with John, she's very, very much, her world really closes. Although it seems like it was sort of closed before John. So can we talk about her personality and her look and all that stuff?
She was, I don't know how to describe it, but she was ethereal. She could walk into a room and stop traffic. Not because she was the most beautiful person in the world. No. She had an aura about her instantly. That's what attracted John to her also, I believe, mm-hmm. that she had that je ne sais quoi, that something special that everybody wanted to know her because of that.
Right. And the way they portray her so far in the series is that she's playing these games, you know, or she's playing hard to get. Did she have that kind of confidence?
No. Well, she was confident, but I don't think she played games with him. I think she was scared to death of him, honestly. I mean, she dated a guy who was a model. She dated some pretty important people. That yeah. wasn't it. And she was always kind of laissez-faire about it. You know, I had talked to her about all these dates before, and
right.
they were meaningless. When John came around, I think it scared her a bit. And I know what really scared her was the paparazzi and being in his life. She almost didn't want that and John never gave her the time
yeah.
to get to know that life.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't a gradual thing. She was thrown to the dogs.
Yeah.
And that's when I came in. I was there in the beginning, basically.
Right. And what people don't know, and it's funny you brought this up because I forgot. I think we talked about this briefly at dinner. I dated Michael Bergen. Michael Bergen
which
was
is so funny. Yeah. yeah
who
yeah.
people might know from Baywatch. But when I met him,
yeah.
I met him at Foxwoods Casino. We were both playing blackjack. He asked me out, and him and his friend's name was BJ.
He was stunning.
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 I had very blonde hair back then.
Also still stunning.
And I was very young. And BJ and him came up to me, and they were talking to me. And I had freckles on my nose, and he says, "You have freckles like Carolyn." And I didn't know who Carolyn was. And then I started dating Michael, and BJ later told me that Carolyn was his ex-girlfriend
yes.
who had left him
yes.
for JFK Jr.
Basically.
And I didn't, true. You know, I think there was a lot of overlap. I think there was a lot of on
well, there
and
was
off.
There was overlap with him, and there was overlap with Daryl Hannah.
Right.
At the same time.
Right.
And that's why there was overlap.
Yeah.
It was happening at the same time. And rightfully so. They weren't connected, you know, permanently to either one. So
right.
why not?
And I had I remember being in his apartment, and he broke up with me saying he was offered a job in LA that he was going to, which ultimately became Baywatch.
Right, right.
But I will tell you, as somebody who dated him and really liked him, I mean, he was a nice guy. We didn't date for long. He was enamored with her and was heartbroken
yeah.
That they had broken up. And it was hard for him to look at the paper because that was what was in the paper. And in his apartment, he had a huge bird cage. I forgot about it until this moment that I'm telling you that he told me she had given him. And I don't know what that connection was or whatever, but they
That's
must
funny.
Have had a bird together or liked a bird cage or I don't know. But anyways.
I don't know anything about
so that. So that was my only connection to them, her. But yeah, to her and whatever. Okay, so, and I think they talk about her dating a guy named Mike in the first episode of something. Yes. And that is Michael Bergen, yeah, or it must be.
Has to be, yeah. It has to be, because the timing is right.
Right, so, okay, so let's go back to it. So she is this amazing, beautiful girl. And how do you become friends? Do you start spending some time with her?
It was strange. I mean, she would call me up at Cartier and say, hey, what are you doing for lunch? I'm like, nothing. Let's go to lunch. I'm like, sure. I'm going to lunch with Carolyn Bessette Kennedy. Well, she wasn't Kennedy then.
Right.
But the paparazzi was stalking her. So it was a safe place for her to come to Cartier because the guards would protect her. I would protect her. She'd come in a cloak of craziness, you know, with her big sunglasses on and, you know, hunched over so no one would see her. I'm sorry, she's 6 feet tall and blonde and gorgeous. Of course people are going to see her.
Yeah.
But she would ride the subway. Everyone thought that was just a once in a while thing. No, it was a lot. She would ride the subway a lot.
Yeah.
So she would come in. We'd go to the Omni Berkshire across the street on 52nd Street. It was a place called Kokushin, I think the restaurant was. And we would sit in the back corner. She would face the wall. I would face out. The place was always empty, and the guy at the desk, at the door, knew that who she was instantly. And I was like, keep everybody away.
Right, so you were protective of her.
Yeah, I was very protective of her right from the beginning, and she loved me for that.
Do you feel like she had a lot of close friends, or she was very, like, you became a close friend very quickly, so...
Right, and it was odd. I mean, my sister had died that December... Let's see, December of 95. Mm-hmm. So somehow she was very compassionate for people. And I had just come back to work after months away. And so it was interesting to meet somebody that was not only ethereal, but so compassionate. She wanted to know everything. And she was the kind of person that you could be in a room with 500 people and she'd be talking to you and you were the only one that existed. Very rarely do you see people able to do that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
And she was
quality.
Able to draw people in. She never lost eye contact with you when she was talking to you. Most people see her as always with her head down. That's true because she was trying to avoid everybody else.
Right.
Right? Okay, so back to the watch. She got the tank watch. She left. But she would come back and see me all the time. We'd go out for lunch. I'd go down to their apartment and hang out. And then...
Was she a big spender? Did she come in and spend all the time?
Well, no, she had a big credit. I mean, back then it was probably $11,000 or something. And you know, the little tank watch was $1,000. So she had a lot of money to spend. She came in, bought a strand of pearls from me, which has been photographed before in a little black dress. You can see her. She bought toe rings for her and Carol Radziwill. So that's John's cousin, his wife, Prince Radziwill's wife's Carol.
Right.
And Carol,
who people know from The Housewives.
Yes, which I never watched, but I have been in contact with her about the toe rings recently because she went, the whole crazy story, she went to a psychic about it and it came up about the toe rings. And so I was there for these weird moments in her time and she did tell me about the wedding because I sold her, I think cufflinks it was for Anthony Radziwill, as the best man, he wore them, I believe, in the wedding.
Oh, wow.
So I knew about the wedding. She told me she wished that she could invite me, but she only had a certain number of people she could bring because it's such a small place.
Right.
And I understood. I wasn't in the family, so what did I need to go for? Speaking of which, the one day in May, so that's like a month after I met her, she came in. I had already met her mother for some reason. She brought her mother in to meet me one day and whatever. I think her name was Anne. Yeah, Anne Friedman. So she came in around Mother's Day and she said, Guy, show me what you would buy for your mother for Mother's Day. And I picked out a pair of earrings. They were like, I don't know, $1,800 or something. And they were little three gold, you know, Cartier rolling ring earrings. She bought them for her mother. But that day she walked from Cartier to Sutton Place where I lived, gave them to the doorman and said, these are for Guy's mother for Mother's Day because she just lost a child.
Oh my gosh.
I know. See, that's the kind of person she was that nobody knows. I mean, everybody thought she was some kind of cold bitch, but she was so compassionate and so kind.
That's so
thoughtful. I barely knew. She never met my mother.
Right.
Which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so, sorry, that made me, like, tear up.
I know, it makes me tear up 30 years later. Actually, after the wedding, she called me up, and she said, Guy, I have this horrible jewelry that John gave me as a wedding gift that Ari Onassis gave Jackie for their honeymoon. Can you do something with it? It's horrible. So I was like, okay. She called me at home, and this is, I don't know. She had my, you know, my home number. So it was before cell phones even. It was 1996, right? Mm-hmm. I guess so. Yeah, 96, 97, somewhere in there. So I went down to their apartment on North Moore. Mm-hmm. And I remember the day, I know the day because I sketched the layout of their apartment in my my diary. Because I wanted to remember where the furniture was, because we talked about John had these weird kind of Bahamian chairs and all this stuff. Anyway, so I go down there. We went through the wedding albums. I was the first person to see the wedding albums.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful pictures. I mean, things that no one's ever seen, I can remember. And then she brought out this jewelry, and it was a pair of earrings and a pendant. The pendant was about 15 carats.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so this is 18. So this is a big diamond, right? Yeah. And a really clunky white metal mounting. And a pair of earrings, each with four diamonds, apparently, mm-hmm. in this clunky, badly made white metal mounting. She said, what do I do with this? So I sketched out some things for her. I said, this big thing, I don't know what you're going to do with this. You're never going to wear this.
Yeah.
She said, well, you take it. I'm like, no, I don't want this. This is kind of weird. No, I don't need this. I'm never going to wear it. Hello. So I went back to Cartier and sat down with the design department and told them what I wanted. I wanted a three stone ring, a pair of studs, mm-hmm. and three pendants, right? One for her, one for her, each of her sisters.
Oh.
Right. So I tested the diamonds, and they didn't test as real. And I was like, what the hell? Yeah. So I called her up. I said, Carolyn, I'm sorry, sweetie. These are not testing as real. She said, oh, God, just throw them away. Like, well, I said, before I throw them away, can I take them out of the mountings and try to test them again? Because something tells me something's wrong with this, the way they look.
Yeah.
She said, I don't care. So I opened up the mountings mm-hmm. and retested the diamonds, and they're all like D-flawless.
Oh, my God.
They were set in lead and plated with something.
And that makes it test like it's a fake. And that made them test
at the time. They didn't test as diamonds. Oh, so Ari must have done this to get through the tax, you know, around the...
interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
You brought up her sisters.
Yeah.
Now, we all know about the one sister that died, Lauren.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know there was another sister.
Yeah.
So who was the other sister? Did you ever get to meet either sister?
I only
met
Lauren once.
Okay.
I never met the other sister. She was not that close to anybody in her family. I mean, she was in a sense, but they weren't there going through what she was going through.
Right.
Like someone like me, who was an outsider, was great and fresh because I didn't have any preconceived notions of her or demands on her. So I wasn't expecting her to be anything, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
Where her family would. Anyway,
that's a good point.
I have something to show you.
Okay, show me.
So Carolyn, after she picked up her stuff, she ended up giving me one of the diamond necklaces. Now, it doesn't look like a big deal, but for a D-flawless 1-carat diamond, it's still in its original box.
Wow.
Now, I've had this for 30 years,
yeah.
sitting in a vault.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
So I want to go back to, you were talking about their apartment.
Yeah.
So people are going to want to know, what was the apartment like? How many bedrooms? You know, New York real estate's a big deal. This is gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, it's very simple.
Yeah. And
so she so my mother wore this for years.
Wow.
Yeah. And now my mother's 102.
Right.
And she really doesn't need big jewelry anymore. Not that this is big, but she shouldn't be in a home with, you know.
Sure.
Carolyn's diamond.
Of course.
Anyway, so their apartment was great. You went in, and there was no doorman on North Moore, and took an elevator right up to the apartment. It opened right into
the apartment.
Don't
you think that's interesting? They didn't have a doorman? Did they have security?
No.
Wow.
Nothing.
So they didn't have...
And you buzzed in.
Yeah, but I feel like now, wouldn't you think Secret Service follows former president's children?
I'm sure they did, and I don't think he cared.
Right. Okay. So he felt safe, and it was not an issue.
But remember, down in Tribeca, back in 1996, mm-hmm. nobody lived there. It was no man's
right,
land.
Right, that's
it's
true.
It's like when you drove, there was no traffic. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you got off the apartment. The doors opened right into the apartment. There was a couple bedrooms to the right. One was Efigenio's, who was their houseman, who was Jackie's houseman that raised
John.
Caroline and John.
Okay.
Efigenio.
Wow.
I think they called him E.G. or something. And I think you hear that in the show.
Right.
And you're wondering who the hell that is. It was Efigenio, the houseman.
Oh.
I met him once. maybe more than once, I forget. Anyway, so it opened up in the elevator, and you turn to the left, and the dining room and living room kind of flowed together. The kitchen was on the right. There was like a den area off the kitchen, and then back further facing south was their bedroom. I walked into the bedroom the first time, and there was no drapes and no shades. I'm sorry. You two are the most famous couple in the world, and you have no shades on your bedroom? I love this. Are you performing for the world?
Wow.
And Carolyn
was like,
what was
their view?
It just faced south. There was nothing really south of them. I don't know what's there now. I'm sure there's buildings and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, if you had binoculars,
right,
you could have a great field day watching them.
So it was it had like 3 to 4 bedrooms.
At least three.
Okay.
That I remember.
And seemed what, like 3,000 square feet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it was a big apartment, especially for back then.
And I think there was another famous actor that bought that apartment after they died.
Interesting. It would be interesting to find out.
So I have something important to tell you about that.
Tell me.
So when they died, of course, I didn't believe it. Because John and Carolyn had moved down to Vero Beach, Florida to take flying lessons for John at Flight Safety. And I grew up wintering in Vero Beach my whole life. Mm-hmm. My parents had a place there. My great uncle and his wife had a place there. So I was like, you know, a native son, basically. And I actually had a condominium next to my parents on the ocean.
Okay.
John and Caroline rented a house down the street. So I since, you know, Caroline had been kind enough to give my mother, a Mother's Day gift, mm-hmm. I connected them. And they would write to each other and all this stuff, crazy. In fact, when they died, I take that back. When I went to the apartment the first time, my mother's notes and her Christmas cards were still on the refrigerator. Oh. And she said, that's my Vero Beach Nana.
Oh,
so
wow.
Can you imagine when they died? They probably thought, who the hell is this? Anyway, so they were down the street in Vero Beach. I was working at the time, so I wasn't there a lot. But I said, I connected her with my mom, and they were supposed to hang out all the time because John was going to be flying. What was Carolyn going to do all day?
Mm-hmm.
So my mother had the intention of taking her out and showing her the town and introducing her to people and, you know, going to lunch and all those kind of things. But then like a week or two later, John's cousin died in a skiing accident. Do you remember that? He ran mm-hmm. into a tree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which cousin that
was.
Yeah,
I forget too. But
right. So they left abruptly, unfortunately. And Carolyn wrote me a letter about his flying.
Right.
And talking about, I'm sorry, I couldn't see your mom. We had to leave abruptly. We had this, you know, tragedy in the family.
What if I told you that the idea that you only get parasites when you travel to some exotic country is flat wrong? Millions of Americans carry parasites right now, often without symptoms. For example, it's estimated that millions in the United States have been exposed to Toxocara, a parasitic worm, yet most never even know it. Parasites do not need a plane ticket. They can enter through tap water, sushi, undercooked foods, or contaminated produce. Some strains live in all stages, eggs, larvae, adults, hidden in your gut, releasing toxins that sabotage your energy and digestion. That's why I'm excited about Parify, Kim Rogers' 30-day full-spectrum parasite cleanse. The kit works by clearing parasites, worms, candida, and heavy metals, targeting parasites in all life stages, supporting gut health, detox pathways, and toxin removal. It's taken orally, daily, for 30 days. With precise dosing. I'm actually doing it myself right now. I started with the lymph cleanse, then I'm doing the Parify. Want to dive deep? I did a full interview with Kim Rogers, the worm queen herself, where we expose all the myths, understand the facts, and show how to protect your body. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Meanwhile, go to rogershood.com and use the code Rachel to get 10% off of your order. That's R-A-C-H-E-L for 10% off. Give it a try. Maybe your body's missing link is hiding inside. Let's do this together. Again, it's rogershood.com, rogershood.com, and use the code Rachel for 10% off. If you've ever been through a divorce or you're in one right now, you already know it's not just emotional, it's chaotic. It's paperwork, deadlines, financial disclosures, custody schedules, legal filings, and half the time you don't even know what you're supposed to be tracking until it's too late. That's why I want to tell you about Splitify. It's an AI-powered divorce operating system designed to turn divorce from drama into data while saving you time and money. Splitify helps you organize all of your documents, evidence, custody details, communication, finances, everything into one secure platform. It can even help flag high conflict behavior, track custody schedules, map assets and debts, and generate court-ready files so you're not walking into a legal battle completely unprepared. Whether you're working with an attorney, going through a mediation, or doing it on your own, Splitify helps you stay organized, informed, and strategic because divorce is expensive enough without wasting time and money on confusion. So if you want to protect yourself, protect your kids, and walk into this process with clarity and control, go to mysplitify.com. Use the code Rachel for 50% off your first 3 months. That's mysplitify, mysplitify.com, promo code Rachel.
So I didn't know that he moved somewhere to get flying lessons. Yes. Did he then resume them back in New Jersey or wherever they...
This is the problem. This is the problem. He never finished his instrument rating for flying. So he did not know the instruments. So when you're flying in fog or rain or at night, if you don't know the instruments...
Right. And also dead. There's the feelings you get when you... forget what it's called, but when you're flying and you don't know
whether
the
proximity you're upside down even.
Right to the earth.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Terrible that I can't remember the name of that.
I can't either, but I get that. My parents were both pilots. Yeah. My sister, my brother, stepbrother were pilots, so private pilots.
Yeah.
So we knew the airport. We kept our plane there. So.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to get to that in a minute. I just want to go back to a little bit before. As people are watching this show,
yeah,
we see that they've been dating and... We finally, you know, at the beginning, we see that they just start to get into it and there is a big breakup because of an anonymous letter. Did you ever hear about that?
Minimally.
Okay.
And I heard about it. I can't even remember who told me about it. I don't think it was Carolyn, actually. Remember, I came just after that point.
Yeah.
After the letter and after they got back together.
Right.
So
from your perspective, you don't know much about that. When you met them, they were very much together. Do you know if you were friends with her before or after the other big fight that they like to talk about a lot in Central Park?
The one in the park, right. I think, I'll have to look at the dates. It's kind of 30 years ago,
yeah,
so it's hard
long
to remember
time.
Exactly what you were doing.
But it's not like she talked to you about it, I guess.
No, I mean,
Did she only speak to you kindly about him? Did she ever question their relationship or?
Yes, in a way. She told me that he didn't understand that she was so unprepared for public life. And he did not understand her hesitation to being part of that. This was the only problem. This was the problem when she first met him. Mm-hmm. This is the problem that continued through their marriage.
Right.
She really hated being thrown into the limelight.
Right.
Can you imagine... Well, you can imagine.
A little bit.
Right? Exactly. and it happened to me too once in another country where mm-hmm. I did a TV show and I was all of a sudden a superstar and it was weird.
Well, the difference is, though, is that she becomes a superstar adjacent.
Adjacent.
So she loses...
And so people hated her.
Right. So she loses her own identity. It's almost
totally.
Like she has no credibility as her own person. And it's the narration of what people see. So lucky for her... She was attractive. She worked at a company that gave her some credibility. She was in fashion, right?
That's right.
And
that's
she seemed mysterious. But then there was a bunch of people, and then iconic to some way. And then another side of it is people must have hated her because they were like, who is this woman off the street?
Well, wait a minute. Yeah. And she got the most eligible man in the world.
Right.
So hot. And, you know, who is this girl? And, you know,
right. Is she good enough?
What happened to Daryl Hannah?
Yeah.
And, you know, that stuff.
Right.
It's kind of bizarre, right?
Yeah. And Daryl Hannah at the time was the biggest star.
She was huge.
I think she had already done, what was it? Mermaid? Not Mermaid.
Oh, no. Splash.
Splash, yeah.
That was good. It was cute.
And, but I will say that Carolyn, I would like Carolyn more than Daryl Hannah.
Of course.
He has a type. I mean, they're very similar.
Yeah, definitely has a type.
Okay, go back to her personality a little bit more because I'm curious, because she is so mysterious. Was she funny? Was she smart? Was she thoughtful? I mean, she was obviously thoughtful about the thing with your mother, but thoughtful, right. Like, did she like to talk to you about deep conversation?
Absolutely. She would come in, I'd put her in my little office, and I would forget that Cartier had existed. And right. Everybody knew not to bother me when she was in the store, mm-hmm. because, you know, people would come in, the king of so-and-so and all these famous people, and whoever it was, just forget about it. Let yeah. the manager take care of it. And, you know, I'll take care of Carolyn, because she was my focus. And she was my person, you know what I'm saying? And what's funny is, it's very much the same as when I first met you. I walked up to you and said, I don't care what you did before today or who you were. You're my friend starting right now. I did the same thing with her.
Oh, I remember that conversation.
It's the only two times I've ever said that to anybody.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway, so she was very thoughtful, of mm-hmm. course, as you know, but highly intelligent and okay. very insightful. But also, there was a part of her that was very girly. Like, she came in one day, all a flutter, because her hair was practically white. And she had a hat on and glasses. And she sat down and she said, okay, is this just too blonde or what? And I'm like, what are you going for here, honey? And she's like, I said, is this Marilyn Monroe? I mean, it was that white. It was right. like, it was crazy. Because in the beginning of the show, they show her appropriately.
Yeah.
With a lot of dark roots and just kind of blonde highlights.
Right, it was like dirty.
Right,
blonde.
Right, right. And then it gets blonder and blonder and blonder. Well, at some point, she just goes totally Marilyn.
Right.
And she was completely freaked out. And she was so mad at her hairdresser. And she wanted to change. She wanted to know if I had a hairdresser for her, that it could be secretive and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Do you think that Jackie or John had an influence on how she looked back then?
Well, she never met Jackie. And Jackie was oh. also my client.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize that they never met.
No, they never met.
So I remember in the scene, so maybe this is incorrect in timing, he says, I wish you could meet my mother, but we're not ready or whatever.
Right.
So Jackie dies before they even
yes,
ever met.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's incredible. Okay, wow.
I don't think they ever met. I never heard they
yeah.
met.
Yeah, okay.
So funny thing is, Jackie came in, let's see, she died in 94, didn't she? When did you?
94,
that's 94. What I thought.
Okay,
so they weren't hot and heavy enough by 94.
Interesting.
To have Jackie meet Carolyn.
Oh, that's good information then. Yeah,
think
because
about
it
that.
Seems
94,
like.
94. They weren't hot and heavy till basically 95, 96, right?
Right.
And
right.
so when did they get married? What was the
96.
Date? 96, right.
September 1996.
September, right. So I met her in April. Now, I used to go to George all the time. Like, I'd go over there for no reason. And just because she would tell me she's coming up there, can I see her? Because what is she going to do at George? John always...
You mean, when you say George, you mean...
George the magazine.
Yeah,
right.
So they had an office or something? What do you...
Well, it was huge. Okay. So Cartier was 52nd and 5th, mm-hmm. and George was on 6th Avenue and like 51st Street or something. So
okay.
I would go there all the time. I would just
and,
walk the couple
And did
blocks.
He... I forget what George is. So
George Magazine was a political magazine.
But they aimed to make it a little bit more
sexy. It
was sexy,
yeah. right? And they put Cindy Crawford on the cover in like a uniform.
Right, I remember
that.
That
was like the big deal.
How many years did that last for? Not long, right?
4, maybe.
Right, okay. So
something
they,
like that.
It couldn't continue after
Without
he died?
Him. No,
or,
yeah, it could not. Okay. And it was struggling... at the before they died.
Yeah.
It was struggling. And so the interesting thing is I'd go there all the time. I'd show up and John would be running back and forth, you know, through the lobby area where I'm sitting. At. Now, you know, you couldn't just go up there anyway. You had to, you know,
yeah.
Be called up and sure. all that stuff. And Rosemary Terenzio, the John's assistant, was always there. She was lovely. She always helped me. And she and Carolyn were friendly. Mm-hmm. In fact, Carolyn gave her that famous leopard coat that she bought like at a thrift store.
Oh my gosh.
And I think it was just sold. Rosemary just sold a bunch of that stuff at auction
oh.
and did very well.
Oh,
so there's a lot of that stuff coming out now. Like they're reissuing. I heard that Prada's supposed to be reissuing some of the clothes.
Oh, wow.
Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I heard that there's copies made now.
Wow.
So why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you had said just briefly that you had met Jackie Onassis.
Yeah,
before.
She was a client of mine.
Okay, before you knew Carolyn.
Yes, before, because that was 90, she died in 94. She came in to see me right before she died.
So what's interesting about her is in this show, they portray her as being very protective of John and not liking anyone he dates. But from what I remember reading about her, she just seemed like the most wonderful, soft woman. So what was she really like?
First of all, she spoke very softly and with a slight lisp.
Interesting.
And I think Naomi Watt really got that right. I don't know how she did it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she did a fabulous job.
It's so funny you say that. I heard it almost as like a slight accent. It's a lisp. It's a lisp.
It's a very gentle lisp. Wow. So Jackie came in to see me right before she died. I mean, it wasn't right before. It was in the 94-ish. I can't remember the date. I have it somewhere. And she brought in a tank watch. Another tank watch, right? And I remember turning it over and it said Patrick and a date on it, like 1964 or 66. I don't remember the date. Mm. And I thought, what the hell is this? So when I got home, I called my mother. Because she's the omnipotent one, right? And I said, who is Patrick? She said, oh, that was the son who died after 3 days. So Jackie brought it into service, the watch, to make sure. And she told me she never wore it.
Huh.
She said, I'd never wear this watch. And I thought, this is strange, right?
Right.
It's a beautiful tank watch. It's probably famous at this point. And I don't know where that watch went. I'm sure Caroline has it somewhere. But that's a watch I don't think anybody's ever seen.
Right. Oh, wow. So, okay, and then what also was John like? I mean, here's the interesting thing about John. Listen, we all know him as, like, the most attractive man we've ever seen, besides the actor that now plays him.
Hello, he's going to go places.
Wow, which, by the way, shows what
you're married.
It shows what a good actor he is, though, because when you see him, like, in his Instagram, he looks totally different.
And
he wears his hair.
First acting role.
I know, it's kind of amazing because he does such a good job of really pulling this off. But the interesting thing for me that I see as an outsider is that he was so good looking, and to so many people and in the show, you see how powerful he is. He's son of, you know, this famous, gorgeous, powerful man who was killed, and this beautiful woman, and all this stuff that happens with Marilyn Monroe and blah, blah, blah. And he's dated famous women, but he can't get his shit together in terms of having his own credibility. He can't pass the bar forever. He can't kind of get his shit together with a magazine.
He was that way in boarding school.
In his head, I think that he felt like he was the fuck up. And Caroline was this straight-laced, smart woman married to this smart guy.
Right, exactly.
And he was like the loser. I mean, I hate to say the loser, but, you know, the black sheep
a
little bit.
He just couldn't get it together.
And
he cared more about being a normal person.
Right.
And I think that comes across pretty well in the show. Now, what's interesting is, one of those times that I was in their apartment, Carolyn said to me, I asked her about what did she think about him in politics, because she's, you know, just running a magazine that, you know, that was at a low circulation and whatever. It wasn't a big deal, but people bought it because of him, right? And she said, listen, John told her, so she's saying this to me, she said, John told me that I could go on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and run for president and still win. Now, that's a line Trump stole.
Wow, that's true.
Now, Carolyn told me that in 1996.
Wow.
Trump's adopted that, you know, in 2016
or something. So John and her knew that, well, it seems like he knew that he was destined for something and wanted to
Absolutely.
Try his own version.
He was trying to be his own man first.
But he also knew
they were going into politics.
Right.
And she would have been the best first lady ever. Imagine how the world would be different if those two had, if he had been president and she'd been the first lady. Now, mind you, there's always the woman behind the man.
Yeah.
And in this case, I think that's what it would have been.
Right.
I think Carolyn would have been the strong force behind him.
To keep him
on the straight and narrow and keep him focused and all that stuff. And
although inside he was built for it. I mean, he really was.
Of course he was.
He
built
may
for
not
it.
Have been, you know, grown up in terms of politics and law, you know, on paper because he wasn't that good at it. But I think internally this was a guy who was built for more and knew it, but wanted to create his own path.
Exactly.
Which made it really sad.
It is sad.
Because he believed in what he was doing, but didn't follow through.
And it's the opposite of Carolyn. Think about that.
Yeah.
She was exactly the opposite of that. She wasn't built for this and was forced into it, whereas John is forced into it and didn't want to be, really.
Right.
I don't think he wanted that.
That's
life.
A really good point. So you have a lot of letters with you.
Yes, I do.
Now, this is a time when people wrote letters. I mean, I can't even remember the last time I bought a stamp. I don't even know how much they
are.
I
write thank you notes.
See, I love that. Yeah, I did write you a thank you note.
Yes, you did. I still have it. Okay, so interesting enough, for their wedding gift, because mm-hmm. of course I knew about the wedding.
Yeah.
And I kept my mouth shut, as I have for 30 years, mm-hmm. right? I thought, what am I going to get them? So I called my mother, and she said, get them engraved stationery with their names on it. So here's an exact, this is their stationery.
Oh my gosh. Right?
And
this is the one you got them?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I have the engraving plate. What did I do with it? Oh, here it is.
Oh my gosh.
So.
And it's Cartier.
Yes, of course, it's Cartier.
Oh my God, gorgeous.
So no one's ever touched this, Rachel, but I can let you touch it because you're my girl.
Okay.
Hold on.
I have clean hands.
Sorry, it's taking me a moment.
No, it's okay. So tell me what this is.
This is the engraving plate that made the stationery. Now, this is their...
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that cool?
Wow.
All right, so this is a blank one, which I happen to have because I paid for it.
Yeah.
But the best part is, here's the thank you note.
Oh, can I see her handwriting?
Yes.
Oh, she's so chic.
So she wrote it to me at Cartier, even though she knew my home address.
Oh.
And those come in later. I have all kinds of letters from her.
Oh my God. Incredible.
Isn't that great?
So what are the, so now in this day and age when there was no phones, right? So you had to get a hold of
cell phones were minimal. Okay. So think about this, 1996, okay. right?
I don't remember when cell phones came around.
Well, people had them, but she had one, but she had to change it like all the time.
That's right. Okay. I was in college, 1996. So, okay. I had a cell phone then. I remember, but you didn't really know how to use them.
And they were hot all the time. Remember, it was a nightmare.
Okay.
So, I would call her at George, or I'd call her at home.
Got it.
And I'd call her on her cell, but she had to change her number all the time. I don't know who gave her numbers out. It was weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think people still do that to this day, right?
Yeah.
But the kind of things you guys would write back and forth were what? Like how you were doing?
Yeah,
or...
yeah. I mean, here, I don't know. Let's see what I can find here. Sorry.
That's okay.
She would come in to see me. Here's a note that she would write on my stationery at my desk. I was off that day. Here, look at it. Read it.
Dear Guy, I stopped in today hoping you might be in. Thank you for your sweet note. I would love to see you for lunch whenever you have some time. Call me and we'll make a time and date. XOX Carolyn. Beautiful.
I know. It makes isn't you it cry interesting
that,
later.
Isn't it interesting that you stood that you kept these things? I mean, do you keep every note you ever get?
No.
No.
But what's weird is, you know, so you meet somebody and you, I said this to you the other day at dinner. Do you remember? I said to both you and Dan, when I met each one of you, I knew you were going to be my really good friends.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of friends as you do. And we don't make a lot of time. We don't have time for new people.
Yeah. Right.
I loved you two instantly the way I loved her. Oh. That's a rare thing in life to be bonded with somebody. For whatever the reason, doesn't matter what the reason is, but to know instantly that you love somebody and you're going to cherish them and support them and protect them.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about her and so I feel about you too.
Oh, I love you so much.
Yeah, I love you too.
Told me that she wrote you once about feeling nervous about flying.
Yes. Let me see if I can find which letter that is. Okay. I have so many here.
Take your time.
Here, you want to read this one?
Yeah.
So, now, this is written to me on Sutton Place.
Need my glasses for this. This time I have my glasses. Okay, I'm always borrowing yours. So it has their address on it. It says January 10th, 1998. So they were married for 2 years. This was right before they died. 6 months before they die, you get this letter. January 10th, 1998. Dear Guy, thank you for your lovely card and contribution. You have been so thoughtful and supportive over the last 2 years. It means a great deal to me. I hope your holiday season, although always difficult, was joyous for you. See you soon for lunch. XOX, Carolyn.
Okay, here's another one. You got to read this one. This is a little bit about the flying.
Okay.
These have been in a safe for 30 years.
Wow.
Nobody's ever seen these.
March 18th, 1998. I love how she has her address on here. It's like, you know, because it's so private.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
She's writing to me.
Yeah, right. Of course, of course. Dear Guy, hello, with an exclamation. I ran into your wonderful Joey at Chanel the other day. Oh, got it. He was lovely and so handsome. Anyhow, I have been out of town sporadically for about 8 weeks. Currently, we are in Vero Beach, but I have been in Miami for almost the entire first week of our stay. John is working on his private pilot's license, and our close friends were just married in South Beach, thus the excursion to Miami. I'm leaving this week unexpectedly and will not be able to visit your mother. I hope she and your whole family are well and happy. I'll call you when I'm back in New York. See you soon. XOX, Carolyn. I love how she does the XOX, by the way. It's always the
which
same.
Which I've always done too, which is interesting.
I'm going to start doing it now myself.
So that's probably the only letter she ever wrote that mentions the John's flying.
Okay.
Interesting. But it also mentions the fact that she had to leave Vero Beach. She didn't say why. I knew why because it happened.
Right.
Okay. So I have all these papers. I mean, here's a Christmas card. But it's a cheesy Christmas card. Right. It's not like something fancy.
She probably went into Duane Reade or whatever.
Yeah, if that.
1997. Dear Guy, have simply the most wonderful Christmas and New Year. Thank you for your support and kindness. See you soon. XOX Carolyn.
Right.
All right, let's talk about as it gets closer to when she dies. Does she start to disappear more or you're still seeing her just as much?
No, I retired from Cartier.
Okay.
So that was... See, when did they die?
They died July 16th, 1999.
Okay. So I left Cartier, I think it was June 1999. So right before.
Right before.
And so
this What'd you leave to do, by the way?
I wanted to be an interior designer. Okay. Or actually, I wrote to Carolyn a letter and I said, I'm leaving Cartier. It was hard at that point in 1999 to get a hold of her.
Okay.
We had to do clandestine things, you know, meet at her apartment or go to the restaurant or meet at George. But it was very difficult because she had to get a new phone like every 3 days. It was crazy. So I would write her notes. She would write me notes and we'd go back and forth. And I wrote her a lot. So I moved up to my country house and I didn't know what I was going to do. So I wrote her a letter saying, I'm either going to be an interior designer or an antique dealer, or some combination of the two. You know, perfect thing for some gay guy in his 30s, right?
And you had made some money at Cartier.
I'd made a lot of money at Cartier. I'd been there 11 years. I was a top dog for a long time and made plenty of money and had a country house.
Had a good Rolodex of people that maybe you could work on
exactly.
their homes.
Exactly. And so I sent out 10 letters and I got 3 jobs immediately.
Oh, great.
So I was on a roll. And she and I talked about me doing their house in Connecticut. They wanted to move to New Canaan.
Okay.
I think they'd found property and we talked about it and that's as far as we got. So they pass away and I was sure that she was like either not on the plane or she somehow escaped it because she couldn't have died. I wasn't thinking about John, to be honest with you. I wasn't that close to John. I only met him like 4 times at parties and in the apartment and stuff. But I wasn't that close to him. I mean, I would never had his phone number or anything.
Well, wait, I want to get to the moment you find about it. But hold on. When was the last time you spoke to her right before it, you think?
It wasn't the day of, but a couple of days before.
And I spoke through letter her. Or you were on the phone or in person?
I spoke to her on the phone and we talked about New Canaan and me decorating the house. And she wasn't sure what John's thought was because There was a house next door to me that belonged to like the Isley brothers or something on like hundreds of acres and it had his own heliport. And I said, you guys should buy this house next to me. It's in the middle of nowhere. No one will ever find you. John can land a plane. There's a private airport, you know, a couple miles away. There's a heliport on the property. No one will ever find you. The house is huge and fabulous. And I went and looked at it for them actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was next door to me, but you couldn't see it. It was like huge,
yeah.
Right? I was on, I don't know, 20 acres, and this was on hundreds and hundreds of acres on the side of a mountain.
Right.
Anyway, I'd written her all this, but in the process of writing her all these things, I said, come up if you need to get away, because there was problems. I knew there was problems. She told me that they were fighting a lot about just stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What I think they were fighting about is that she didn't want to be the sidekick in this sideshow. It was a sideshow.
Mm.
He didn't see it that way. He was used to it. He was like, you know, programmed. Right. She didn't get it.
Right.
So I think that's what the fight was normally about.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. March is a time to celebrate women, all that they carry, all that they give, and all the roles they hold every single day. Between work, family, relationships, and the emotional labor no one sees, it's easy for their own well-being to fall to the bottom of the list. Therapy can be a space to create balance, set healthy boundaries, and make sure you're taking care of yourself the way you deserve. BetterHelp has over 30,000 licensed therapists and served more than 6 million people worldwide. They match you with a therapist based on a short questionnaire, drawing on over 12 years of experience. And if you're not matched within the right fit, you can switch anytime with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5. Based on over 1.7 million reviews, it's clear that therapy can make a real difference. And your emotional well-being matters. Find support and feel lighter in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. There is a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit and the American spirit come together in the Peace Corps. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. And the love part is knowing your hard work can transform lives and build bridges across cultures. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. That's peacecorps.gov/serve.
It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care. Or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour. Plus, access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's-level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
And all these letters, we wrote to each other almost every day, back and forth, back and forth. I didn't save a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I have a few, but I didn't save a lot of them. I don't know, some of them I did and some of them I didn't.
So you were very close enough that if somebody saw the letters, it was intimate in terms of you guys were close. And she was telling you her feelings.
Right.
And did she ever talk about, I mean, I don't know, it sounds like she had been on the plane with him before, but did she ever talk about flying in general or that he...
She told me once that she knew that Jackie didn't want John to take flying lessons. I don't think he ever took one until she died.
Got it.
That you can check that, but I think that's true.
Right.
Anyway, there was all these important letters back and forth, and they died. I remember...
Where were you when you heard they died?
I was at home on Sutton Place in New York, and I thought, this can't be true. Mm-hmm. But then I waited for days and days. I thought they would find her floating and she'd be on a raft or something. And I couldn't believe it. After they died, I went to Savannah on a friend's private plane to look at a house that a mutual friend had bought and was going to need a decorator. So we all flew down. So there's two couples, a bunch of staff and me on this private G5 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I came back from Savannah from the weekend. And I had just come in the door, and the buzzer rings from downstairs. And I answered the phone, and the doorman says to me, Richard, blah, 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 is here. And I thought, oh, it must be Richard, the chef from my friend whose house I just left, right? Because he was on the plane or something, or he was in the house. I don't remember where he was. But I knew the chef lived a block past me, and it was all within walking distance. So I said, oh, send him up. I must have left something on the plane or whatever. So the doorbell rings, I answer the door. Now, mind you, my suitcases are still sitting in the hallway, right? I've just walked in the door. And there's this big bearded older man standing there. I'm like, who are you? He said, I'm Richard Goodenow. I'm senior editor of the National Enquirer. I said, holy fuck. Okay. He said, you know what this is about. I said, it has to be about Carolyn.
And at this point, they had found her body and you knew she was dead.
Yeah, I knew she was. I knew they were dead.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, come on in. I mean, how stupid of me, right? I should have shut the door in the guy's face. But I'm glad I didn't because there's a reason. So I let him in and we walk in. We sit down in my living room, which, you know, an apartment was pretty big. It was like 40 feet long on Sutton Place. And he sits down. And he says, I just want you to know. And I said, what are you doing here? Like, what do you want? And he's like, I just want you to know we're going to press with your love affair with Carolyn Bessette. I said, what? You know, I'm a gay man. Look at these pictures. Look at this apartment. This is a gay man's apartment, you know. He said, not according to your letters. I said, what are you talking about?
Wow.
And he said, I have all your letters that you wrote to her.
Isn't that fascinating that she saved them?
She saved them. I mean, she saved all of them. I said, what are you talking about? And he pulled out from this beaten old briefcase, this thick file. He had faxes. And I said, let me see those. He gave me a couple to look at because I think he was afraid I was going to tear them up.
Yeah, sure.
And I looked at it and I knew the fax number because it was their apartment. Mm-hmm. It was their apartment.
So who do you think gave them this information? E.G.?
Efigenio, no, not in my wildest dreams. He loved John. I don't think he would have done anything. But, you know, there was a moment in time where it was out in circulation that she had an affair with someone who was probably an antique dealer. You can research this. It comes up. That was me.
Oh, my gosh.
It was, right? Is that bizarre?
Oh, I love that for
Isn't
you.
Isn't that juicy? I know. That's why I've kept my mouth shut for 30 years.
You're right? The antique dealer she was sleeping with.
Is that funny?
Oh, well, that clears the...
clears it all up,
clears
right?
It all up for right. All the people that really thought she was cheating.
But in one... And he had the note that said, I'm either going to be an antique dealer or an interior designer. And it said in that note, please come up to my country house. Get away from John if you need to. I'm always here for you. I love you. You know.
So to the outsider reading it, it could look like a love.
To anybody reading it, I loved her intimately without, you know, I mean, like your best friend, right. What you would do for somebody, yeah. Right? I always wanted to protect her. And so that's why I've kept my mouth shut for 30 years. I've been protecting her all this time.
Yeah. So what did that feel like when you finally found out that she was on the plane and her sister and John? I mean, were you angry? Were you sad? Were you, I mean, obviously you couldn't believe it.
You know, what's weird is I consulted a psychic about it because I was traumatized. I'm crying. Okay. I was completely traumatized. And I just went to the country and just stayed there and grew a beard for a while because I was traumatized. Because we had this whole life forward that we had planned about and talked about. You know, him running for president, me decorating their house. I mean, these are like big things in somebody's life, right? And to be with your, I mean, we weren't best friends. Carol Radziwill was her best friend. Mm-hmm. But I was close enough to know intimate things about their life and be part of their life to a point where I knew I had to protect them afterwards.
Yeah.
And so what I said to this guy, this editor, I said, I tell you what, I have more important notes from her to me. One even mentions John's flying. You just saw one of them. And I said, how about this? When the Bissettes and the Friedmans, that's Carolyn's mother and her stepfather, when they're done suing the Kennedys for wrongful death of their two children, right, and that's settled, I will come back to you and I will tell you my truth. And I will tell you the real side of the story. And you can use my letters and I'll tell you the real story. Mm. It's far more interesting from her point of view than mine. Nobody knows me. Nobody cares. Mm. Right? Who cares about Guy Clark from Cartier? You know, some washed up salesman that's a decorator. Nobody cares.
Right. And you think her side of the story was more like her connection with you was still
right.
Something normal. Something that was her own.
What I'm telling you would have been in the National Enquirer.
Yeah.
Okay, but.
And he never came back?
Oh, yes, he came back.
Oh, he came back.
I don't know when it was, a year later or so. The moment that cleared, the next day my phone rang. I saw it come up, National Enquirer, and I picked up the phone. I said, Mr. Goodenow? And he's like, yes. I said, you can go fuck yourself. And I hung up on him.
Never heard from him again.
Wow. And what's interesting is my client at Cartier owned the National Enquirer.
Oh, wow.
I never told the Popes. That I was involved in that kind of mess.
Right, right.
I don't think they ever knew.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the series for a second. There's one more episode that's coming out. Well, now that this episode is out, it'll be five, right? There's a total of five.
There's five. Yeah.
So there's going to be one more that's come out.
It's on the, yeah.
The series starts with them getting into the plane. Do you remember?
Yes.
So we know, we obviously know what happens, but we see the sister, we see her. She's running late that day. She was getting her nails done or something.
She wasn't just getting her nails done.
Tell me.
She also went to see her salesperson at Bergdorf's, who was diagnosed with cancer, and she went to console her.
Wow.
I don't remember how I know that.
Huh.
I don't know whether she called me and told me that. I don't remember how I know that.
So she was running late, yes. Which is what a lot of people say is why they started flying in the dark.
Yeah. Lauren was also late, I heard, the sister.
Okay.
She was coming from Wall Street. Don't forget, John had his foot in a cast.
Mm.
I forgot what he broke and when. Something silly, like touch football or something. But he was in a cast with crutches, flying a plane. Now, you know you steer with your feet.
Mm. I didn't know, but... There's levers, you're
those
right,
are with the feet. Those are rudders, yeah. Rudders. So that's not easy to steer with a cast on your foot. I mean, who flies with a cast on their foot?
No, well, now, and also not being such a great flyer. And listen, for people that are listening that don't know the story, it was not a long flight.
No.
But it was, the sun was going down.
Yes.
They were running out of time, and the tragedies, you know, all these different avenues converged.
Yes.
To make it that everyone's running late.
Yes.
And there is a time crunch and they need to get there. There's a wedding the next day. And
I mean, she was held up in Friday night traffic. You know, that's right. A nightmare.
Right. And I remember, I guess we all heard the next morning, right? I mean, is that when it happened? I remember waking up and hearing about it. I was driving somewhere in New Jersey. I must have been going, I don't know where the hell I was going, but I was in a car and I heard it on the radio.
Yeah, I heard it on the news.
And I thought, and they hadn't found their bodies yet. No. And I thought,
took a long time for them to find them.
Yeah, I thought that can't be true. They must be somewhere floating and they're going to find them. Because you don't think
that
this
die.
Curse is really a curse, right? You're like, oh, it happened to a couple of the Kennedys.
Right.
There can't be this real curse that's going to happen to him that we all know through the paper and we see him every day.
Right.
And to hear the finality of it, that they were all found in their seats at the bottom of the ocean was terrible. And to, you know, that consumed, I mean, me as an outsider, I think everybody, you wanted to know how it happened, why it happened, how far into the flight.
Yes, all those things.
And it didn't seem like they knew too much of what was going on. It seemed like they slowly ebbed into the water and didn't realize it. But, you know.
My mother, who's a pilot, said that there's no way a person without instrument rating could know how to fly in dense fog over the water. There's just no way. Because there's no, think about it, over the water, there's no places.
Markers.
Where there's no markers, thank you. There's no lights, there's no markers, there's nothing.
Right.
So, I mean, you might be able to fly over the fog in a populated area where you can see lights and maybe a runway and all that stuff eventually, but there was nothing.
But also you need that horizon line.
There was no
because
horizon.
You don't know when you're turning. I mean, you just have no idea where the horizon is.
Right.
And that's why that instrument exists
because
pilots are known for getting out of sorts.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm really excited is the wrong word. I'm looking forward to seeing this last episode because I want to see how they do it. I mean, I think that
I'm not looking forward to
you're
it.
Not.
No. I mean, I'm going to watch it, but I'm going to be prepared because I know I have to relive this again.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard, you know, for anybody losing a close friend, it's hard.
Yeah.
And especially someone who is in the public eye and that you protected on purpose all the time. And I've been protecting her personally with all this stuff all this time.
Well, it's interesting. I wonder if it's hard to, because you knew her so intimately, which probably felt really sacred to you.
Yeah.
And now I feel like the world is getting to know them. Like if you look on Instagram now.
Exactly. They're all over the place.
Everybody's talking about not only the show, but bringing up older pictures of them and times and moments and videos. And then you see memes of girls in the office wearing new outfits right now and pretending to be her and men who I'm going to dress my, I opened my Instagram today and it was a TikTok or something. I'm trying to dress my husband now like John Kennedy Jr. And then it was this frumpy guy who was putting on a tie and, you know, and girls dressing like her. And it's great. I mean, like, that's so great, this resurgence of attention.
I agree.
But it must make you a little sad, jealous,
it's
angry.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just weird. I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, just think about the minimalism that they both worked.
Yeah.
I mean, think
both
about
of them.
Both of them. John was running around in a t-shirt and shorts most of the time, you know, and a cap. And she was always in the most simple Prada clothes. I remember she came into the store one time And she was all in Prada. And when she came into my office, she said, I said, oh, I love this outfit. You know, it's black and white. That's all she ever wore, or tan and black. And she said, oh, God, Prada is the best. You've got to go into Prada. Anything you want, I'll get for you. Oh, anything you want. And I never went in. I would never take advantage of somebody. Imagine somebody saying, go into Prada, I'll buy you anything you want.
I know.
She probably got a discount or something. I don't know.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
What feels unfair or invented out of the show? Anything to you? Because I did see at the beginning of every show, it says some scenes have been changed.
Yeah, there's a lot of the conversations, of course, nobody knew.
Right, of course.
And so that's invented. That guy, whatever his name is, the actor, is so good for John. I mean, he nailed it.
Yeah.
He looks like him. I mean, he worked out a lot to beef himself up, and he took elocution lessons and all that kind of stuff and acting lessons. I mean, he really worked
aura,
on it.
But the aura, like both the of them, aura. The aura of what they represent, yes. Which is hard. I don't even know if an actor can do that. They nailed it.
They nailed it. And there are no videos. I think there's only one video of them at an event like in Los Angeles together. Almost no videotapes of her anywhere.
Oh,
did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why it was hard for the actress to get...
I mean, they've been replaying the videotape of them fighting in Central Park, but it's grainy.
But that was nothing.
And maybe, I was going to say there's video of her walking out of the door when they get married, but it's not a video. I guess it's a still.
Yeah, it's a still. When they're coming down the stairs, he's a step
I think in our imaginations, we've just created.
Yeah. So, you know, I went through all those photographs, and there's one that sticks out in my head. And I'll just share it with you because I've never told anybody. Ifigenio, the houseman who raised John, is on his knees putting cufflinks into John's shirt cuff, right? Mm-hmm. His shirt is open, so you see his torso, and he's in boxer shorts. And he's looking up at him like, I raised this man. Oh. The most beautiful photograph. No one's ever seen it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so... If anybody's seen that...
Where was that photograph? In their house or something?
It was in... Carolyn showed me...
in a book.
Yeah, the books. When the moment they came out, I went through them with her to look at them for the first time.
Right.
And...
it was part of their wedding.
Yeah, it was the wedding album. So anybody who's seen those wedding albums knows that photograph, but nobody else has ever seen it.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is she kept scrapbooks of everything ever written about her.
Oh, no way.
Which I thought was fabulous. And I said to her, what are you keeping this for? This is like so not you. It's very commoner, right? Like things that I'm saving, right? And she said, no, because when we're really old, I want to look back at this and giggle.
Yeah.
Because this might not be funny now, but we're going to want to look back at this later.
Right.
And God, that breaks my heart that she never had that opportunity.
Right. All right, last question for you. What do you want people to remember about her separate from him? And separate from the tragedy?
Wow, that's a hard question. I think the most important thing is that she was just a girl that was thrust into the limelight, unknowing, unaware, and kind of unprotected, right? She did the best she could. She really tried. She wasn't a drug fiend. She wasn't an alcoholic. You know, they've tried everything at some point to make her out as this bad person. I never saw her that way. She was always graceful, kind, innocent, but also fiercely smart and intuitive. And I think some of that comes across in the show, but they'll never get the exact person that she is. They're doing a decent job, though.
Yeah. It's just, you know, that old saying, only the good die young. It's like... In one sense, thank God that's when they died at that moment in time, because they will forever be revered.
And stay young.
Stay young, yeah. Stay beautiful, stay somewhat mysterious, and stay iconic, right? And so as tragic as it is, and how they could have been president and first lady and all these things, you know, they will always be remembered as this beautiful, beautiful couple.
It's true. And that's the way I tried to remember them. I feel like she's always with me, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and I've kept her secret so long. I hope she doesn't mind now. I think it's okay.
Now that everyone's talking about it,
it's my turn to let a little bit out so they know the truth.
So they know the real her. Yeah. Well, Guy, thank you so much for being here.
I love you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
I love you, and I'm going to have you on to talk about other stuff. But this was, you know, so timely, and it's so important to let people know who the real Carolyn Bessette Kennedy is because everyone wants to know.
It's true.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Ka'Chava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Ka'Chava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to ka'chava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.